Blog Talk Radio. Looking at the adulthood, when She was born, and when some of the children who are now adults were born with developmental disabilities, and especially that of Down syndrome, there wasn't a real positive prognosis, not even about their lifespan. And now, you know, people are living longer in general, and especially in this population. And I came across something that just struck my heart, and I immediately emailed our guest to say, I would really like to know more about your wife and your daughter, and I would love to interview you during National Down Syndrome Month. And that was a few months back. And so at the end of September, I was prepared to start doing this interview, and this is like the third week since we've spoken that I've attempted. But we're moving forward, and that's what life is all about. Sometimes things happen. But tonight's program is entitled Upward Bound with Down Syndrome. And there's so much that our guests can share. But what really drew my attention was the fact that the daughter of our guest tonight actually graduated from college. And that, when I just saw the certificate and I saw her sitting there, my heart just started to pitter-patter. So without further ado, as they say, I would like to introduce you to our guest, Ms. Chandra Lumsden Umazar. Are you there, Chandra?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you so much for being on. And I'm still challenged because I'm sitting here with a laptop on my lap, a PC in front of me so I can adjust the volume and all of that. And it's just not cooperating, but I'm just going to keep moving on, find a charger, charge up this phone, and we're just going to keep on moving. I'm sure you know something about that, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yes, yes, yes. So first of all, congratulations on a job just well done and continue, and especially in advocating not only for those who belong to us but for others. So first of all, let's start with where we are now, and then let's go back a bit. So tell our audience about ISLA and what this event was that I got so excited about.
Okay, ISLA is my third child. She has two older sisters, and she was born in 1982. And like you said before, there was not very much information about Down syndrome. The information that was out there was outdated. And I found that there was not a lot of support except for the doctor telling us all the things that she would never be able to do. But my husband and I was determined that we were going to do the best that we could and to give her all the opportunities that was out there for her. And we would just learn right along with raising her. And the opportunity presented itself for her to attend Beyond Academics. It's a four-year program in Greensboro, North Carolina. They attend classes on campus and in their natural environments and in their apartments. My daughter stayed in an off-campus apartment. Her freshman year, her roommates were a senior and a junior, and they were typical college students. And when they graduated, one graduated, and then one did an internship in Florida. Isla was in her apartment in her sophomore year by herself, a three-bedroom apartment, and she did fine. And this year, after 4 years of college, that Agu graduated the Beyond Academic Students with the entire college camp, you know, the college graduates. So it was a very exciting time, and it was something that we never even thought about or even had on our radar that she would ever have the opportunity to go to college.
Wow. So she graduated in what year?
She graduated May of 2014 this year.
All right. So you said that was something that you never even imagined. And obviously, I hadn't either because I'd never seen anything. And it almost made me kind of sad that I had not been aware of such opportunities in order for my sister to have been able to move forward. So what was it that gave you the knowledge? Where did you find the information to know that she was capable of doing that and that there was a program available?
Well, what I found out that was important and all through her life is that when she was born and going forward is that being connected to community, out there advocating, out there talking to the people who would know what the services are, and just networking with different people. And so happened that when she was very young, I joined the board of the Exceptional Children Assistance Center, and that's a parent training center that they have them all over the country, and it's a private nonprofit funded through the federal government through the Office of Special Education. And one of my coworkers went to a function or a workshop, and she met the admissions director, and she came back to work and told me about it. And I was so excited, I called a friend, one of Issa's friends, and told her parent about it. And together we just kept asking about the program. And at that time, the program was funded through what we call a CAP, it's some kind of community program for persons who would ordinarily would maybe have to be live in a nursing home or, acute care center or something like that. But because of CAP, they're able to be in the community. And that's what she needs to go to school. So even though we found out about it early when the program first started, it was about 3 years later that we were able to get the funding for her to go to school at UNCT. Wow. And I think the first schools were out in California. I heard about it years ago that they were starting to open up colleges and admitting students with intellectual disabilities. And so to hear that we had a program in North Carolina, they also have one in Eastern Carolina. I think that was one of the first programs also. And then UNCG. And hopefully they'll continue, and it is continuing all across the country, these opportunities for our children.
Wow. So it was by a coworker actually coming in and telling you about it, correct?
Yes. Yes.
And so if you had just been working someplace else and just doing what most parents do, you probably would not have come across this information.
Well, that's why it's important to network. I was always searching, continuously looking out for opportunities for my daughter. So I would have initially found out, and what they do is they go all, they attend all the transition fairs. They are anywhere that they can be visible. They are now, going to these events and handing out brochures and telling everybody about the program. So, it's, like I said, it's important for parents to network and to always look for that opportunity for their children.
Right. Now, what was the criteria for registration?
One of the things they did was she did an interview, went to the school and had an interview, and we toured the school, we toured the apartments that they would be staying in. And they did take a little test, just ask them different questions, and more so to get an idea of what their social skills were, the level of their social skills. And mm-hmm. after that, like I said, at the time that she was admitted was through CAP funding, and she was approved for it, and we had a meeting. We discussed all the her personal plan. They had a personal plan for her. And for each individual student, they knew, by their interview, what they needed, what type of assistance they need, what type of support they were going to need. And they supported students through typical college students. They hired typical college students to go around campus with the students, to take them to class, to interact with them, extracurricular activities. They went to baseball games, basketball games. So they were, really involved on campus and activities that were going on campus.
Wow. So how did Isla feel about it? Did she Was she aware that this meant that she would be leaving home?
Yes, she was. She was very excited about it. When she graduated from high school, she immediately went to a program at our Central Community College, Central Piedmont Community College. And you can go as long as you want, you know, and then now they have a program called Project Search, and which is a two-year program. And she actually graduated from that program. And she knew that her siblings went to college, and her cousins. So she was aware that when you graduate high school, the next step is college. So she was a bit more excited. She was not as fearful as I was. I mean, I think I wrote an article about letting go. It was very difficult to even imagine. I just couldn't imagine her even spending one night away from me as an adult. And so it was very challenging, to say the least, to but it was exciting because I had her two older sisters went to college. So one of the exciting parts about going was going shopping for bedding and things to decorate the apartment with. That was a lot of fun.
Wow. So when she went to the campus to take a look and to tour the campus, what was her response or reaction?
Well, she was very excited, and she felt like she was, you know, just like her older sisters, that she was going to college, and she was very happy about it. And the fact that her best friend also went to college was also going, she was very excited about that. So she knew someone in the community that was going also. And they roomed together for a little while.
How far away is the campus from your home?
It's about an hour and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
That was difficult to drive away. And the first couple of weeks, if I didn't hear from her, I would get upset. I would get excited. I would call on the on-call. They give you an on-call number, so if you have any type of anxiety, you can call them. And so if I didn't hear from her for one day, I would be calling. And by the time she became a senior, the only time she called me is when she needed money or she wanted to know when she was coming home, or I want her to come home and she was, no, I don't want to come home this weekend. I have plans. So
no!
That was life-changing for me.
Oh, my gosh. I'm laughing because I couldn't even imagine. I can't even imagine. My mother was, like, very, very protective of my sister. And I think I'm a little bit more lenient, but I'm protective. I could not even imagine her being an hour and a half away. And
yeah.
I think I'd probably cry every time I talked to her on the telephone. She'd probably be, and she will say, probably say, oh, Evelyn.
Yes, but you know, and I talked to a lot of parents, and that's one of the most difficult transitions in life that parents go through is letting their children go. You know, I talked to parents who say, oh, my child couldn't do that. And what I want parents to know is that they don't have to be perfect. They don't have to do everything right to go to the next level. But start when they're children, teaching independent skills, social skills. So academically, she's probably on about a second or third grade level, but that's not keep her from moving up the ladder. You can't wait until we reach a milestone to move forward. So one of the most important things that I told parents, social skills is so important. Everything else, assistive technology will take care of. If you want to count, you can use a calculator. You want to write your name, you can't write your name, use a stamp with your name on it. But you can't, there's nothing for social skills except what you're taught.
Right, right. So what does the curriculum consist of?
They learn how to manage money. They learn about relationships. They learn how to manage their money, how to keep their apartments clean. They learn cooking skills. They did job career, job development. They learned how to do PowerPoint to, you know, express, you know, their future and what they, you know, wanted to do when they, you know, finish school.
Wow. Now, are any of their classes mainstream? I mean, do they operate?
They have the opportunity for them to take classes is there. They can do that. And I think some of the students have done that. Isla didn't take any audited classes herself, but hopefully she'll start taking audit classes at Central Piedmont College in our community.
Okay.
But that opportunity, does present themselves.
Mm-hmm. So how often would you visit her? How often would she come home?
She started coming home every 2 weeks because I felt comfortable. I wanted to see what she looked like, what was going on. And then after a while, like I said, she would say, I don't want to come home this weekend. I'm doing something. And she even learned how to go home on a train. So I didn't always have, by the time she was a sophomore, someone would make sure she got to the train station and she'd ride the train home by herself or with her one of her classmates who may live in the same city. And I'd pick her up at the train station. So that was a big step. And they also learned how to get around the community, how to catch the bus, downtown, because they have a lot of free time. Like when they're freshmen, they have a lot of hands-on, and there's someone with them from like 9 o'clock in the morning until about 9 at night. But as they move up the ladder, they back away until in the senior year, they have a lot of free time on their own. So students learn how to get around campus. They would go to dinners. They would go to a mall. They would visit each other in different apartments, spend the night with each other. So they were pretty much a typical college student, the same drama that typical college students have with their roommates. I was just amazed. My and their sisters would just laugh. And if they got upset about something, I said, remember when you were in college? And they go, okay, Ma, we remember. So I said, well, it's no different. It's just, and I tell parents, our fears are no different than the fears we have for our typical children. But because our children have a label, it feels different. And it feels different, to us in our head. But it's no different. And we want this, the same for our typical children. We want for our children with intellectual disabilities or any type of disability.
Wow. Actually, I've been preparing to this, and I had actually taken some notes from some of the articles you had written and saved them in my work program, but I don't have access to those anymore. So I'm sitting here, and I'm thinking, all the things that I wanted to ask. I'm feeling so emotional right now. It's like, oh, my gosh. And I think this is what happens when I initially saw your post in the group of parents of African-American children with Down syndrome. I mean, there's just something in my heart, and I realize it's that connection. And there's the excitement in knowing that it's possible. But then there's also the sense that, am I impeding the progress, which I sort of said that my mother had done, and by being so overly protective because she did not even allow her to participate in the community independent living. So I'm looking at that. I see her so much as my baby. It's like, oh my gosh! And I know that each of the young people, are at different developmental levels, and I think for one, just the ability to communicate the speech. The other is to be able to take care of, personal daily activities and hygiene and care. So I'm assuming that those are things that she had already been doing at home.
Right. Very early on, we try to teach those skills. And it's a lifelong learning skill. It's not something that is going to happen overnight. And I like also, there was a quote that was attributed to Maya Angelou, and it says, do the best you can until you know better. Then when you know better, do better. So parents, I encourage parents to not beat yourself up about, what happened in the past or what you did wrong, because I certainly didn't do everything right. And back then, the same as your sister, because my daughter's 32 now, so she says not that much younger than your sister, we had no support. I didn't even know any other African-American child with Down syndrome. And I used to wonder, where are they? And when she started elementary school, the first time that my daughter participated in the Special Olympics, I saw all these children, African-American children with Down syndrome, but you never saw them in the community. So it was, I was joining support groups with, you know, with other parents. And the first time she went to preschool, she was one of the first African-Americans at the preschool. But the parents were always smiling. They were happy. And I was like, wow, they're smiling. They're happy. There's something, you know, to this. So I started going to the support meetings and just start finding out, well, you know, what's going on here? Where's the opportunity there? It's so, she did a commercial with one of our first Hornet basketball players, Kurt Rambis. When Life Goes On came on, they were looking for a child. They called me. I don't know who turned, you know, who gave them my name, but the Channel 9 News in our hometown came, went to her school and did a whole day interview with Isla and asked her, what do you want to do when you grow up? And one of the things she said, a teacher. And she was able to, she was a camp counselor when she graduated. And that's another thing that I told parents to do. When the children get around in middle school, just like your typical children, start finding out what their interests are. Mm-hmm. Also, get them involved in the community. Have them do volunteer work. And the opportunity that my daughter had, her older sister was in college, and she came home one summer, and she got hired as a counselor working with children with intellectual disabilities and disabilities. So during the summertime, Issa would go to work with her and volunteer. So when Issa graduated from high school, she was hired as a counselor, made the same pay as other counselors made, and had a wonderful experience. And they said, well, we'll hire her back. We'd be happy to hire her back. She had an excellent resume. She did great. And one of the things I did was also keep a individual album, a photo album, or just put different things she was involved in. And when I look back, every picture, she's smiling. And I was like, wow, that is really neat that she had a good life. And when she graduated from high school, she turned to me and she said, Mommy, I love my life. And that was just so telling. She went to her prom. She went, she got a Frank Grassley Award, which is an award that our company gives out every year and is named after one of our parents and board members whose child had a disability and passed away, so they started a college fund. And every year they give a scholarship to a child that has a disability, has overcome all, you know, different obstacles in their lives and was successful. So she was one of the runner-up. And so I tell parents also, I think I wrote an article, is not to waste time thinking about, you know, all the things they're going to miss, all the things they can't do, because, you know, you're grieving over something that hasn't happened yet. And you just have to live in the moment and take one day at a time and appreciate the child where they're at and not what they want them to become or who you think they should become. Celebrate who they are. And life is just so much more fulfilling. And I wanted to say, I had my sister passed away 2 years ago, but she had multiple sclerosis, and I was just grieving the sisters I used to have. You know, we used to do this, we did this, now we can't. And then something told me to stop grieving the sister you had, enjoy the sister you have now. And once I made that turn, we went to the movies, and she was got to the point where she could not talk. All she did was blink. But we still had, we went to the movies. We still had quiet times on the porch. We were, you know, able to interact. I took her to church. And just, you know, okay, we have to do things a little different, but we can still do things. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's what your childhood disability, whether it's intellectual disability or physical disability, sometimes you just have to do things different. But it's your state of mind and living in that moment that makes all the difference.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that it's really real obvious when you talked about
you know, the difference between a physical disability and a developmental disability, it's that the communication is really what people miss on how to communicate, because within there's a soul inside everybody that has,
yeah,
like you said, things that they like, things that they enjoy, things that they're great at. It just is expressed in a different way.
Yes.
And we've got to learn the language, how to connect. I think I just probably would have cried like a baby even when I heard her say, you know, I love my life, because I know when
it struck me too. It really got to the heart, my heart, for her to say that. And I was like, wow, that's something.
And, you know, that's when my sister came to live with me, and I would try to take her back to spend time with my mother. She was like, I don't want to go. You know, she didn't say it that clearly, but she was, no, I want to stay here. So one day I drove her down, which was probably about a 45-minute drive, and she would not stay, so I brought her back home. When we pulled up in the driveway, she said, I live here. I'm very, very happy.
Very good. Very good.
Wow. So you talked about her older sisters, and you also mentioned your husband. What did the family ever have differences of opinion on how she should be handled or treated? Because I know sometimes that can become an issue. If somebody, you know, says, well, you know, you be gentle. Someone said, well, no, don't give her that slack. She needs to have responsibility like everyone else. Was that ever an issue in your family?
Not so much, but, yeah, it has been an issue at times. Number one, discipline. You know, we always disagree on discipline. And one of the things that we did was we disciplined her like we just disciplined her siblings. But one of the things that I told my husband, I didn't want her spanked, because I didn't want her not knowing, and she was very young at the time, so I'm not really fully understanding everything about having Down syndrome or having intellectual disability. But one of the things that I didn't want for her to grow up thinking that if I did something wrong, somebody had the right to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that, you know, we disagreed about. But, you know, when your children are doing something wrong, you know, I don't see nothing wrong with, you know, tapping them or, you know, just redirecting them. But at a certain age, that should stop. And you should find other ways of positive enforcement. And one of the most important thing is to model good behavior. You model the behavior you want your children to have. Long time ago, our parents raised us in fear, and it worked, but it doesn't work on the children today. It does not work. I remember my grandson told me, was riding down the freeway one day, and he was doing something in the backseat, and I said, if you don't stop, I'm gonna stop this car right now. And he couldn't have been, I don't think he was over 5 years old. He said, Nana, think about it. And I almost wrecked the car. I'm like, please just tell me that. He said, I think you better think about it. I'm like, no. I would never question my mother and my father years ago. If they told me they were going to stop the car, I would just, okay, I don't want them to stop the car. He said, no. He's telling me, think about it. Model good behavior. Yes, model good behavior, because they mimic you. Children mimic you. They watch everything you do. So if you're kind, if you are giving, if you're sharing, they see that. You know, if you have a gentle nature, if you're not yelling, and if you yell, then you say, well, that's how I get my point across, by yelling.
So
model good behavior. And another thing that you don't do, and I had to tell your siblings, don't tease her. Don't do things that you think are funny and cute, but they're not funny and cute when she gets older. So don't have behaviors, encourage behaviors that you know you're not going to like when they get older. And just being consistent in your discipline. And that's a hard one for parents. It was a hard one for me, and I'm sure I never did it perfect with none of my children. But being consistent. And if you're consistent, the children know you're serious, and it'll continue. I have four children. I have a younger brother. And he was, you know, one of the things that parents are scared, if I have a child with a disability, I'm not going to have another child. I was we wanted a son.
I didn't quite catch what you just said. Slow down just a little bit. I didn't quite understand what you said.
Okay. I was saying one of the sorry, we were talking about discipline, and I was talking about family support. And one of the things we did is I have a younger she has a younger brother. I have three girls and one boy, and a lot of I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to have another child because this last child had a disability. But we did want a son, and we did have one. He's been excellent with his sister, and he very supportive of her. And he looks after her, and she loves him. So it's a good family. It's a good family nucleus.
Wow. Now, what is the age difference between the one before her and the one after her?
All the girls are all 2 years apart, and then my son is 4 years difference between my son and my daughter. So you can tell I had to think about it.
You had the advice before your grandson came along. You thought about it, so he knew that worked for you.
Yes. I had to think about it. I said, I want to have another child. And all three of them said, Mommy, we want a brother. They wanted three brothers, but they got one, and they're happy they just got the one.
Wow. And so I can imagine with them being closer in age, their experience this might have been somewhat different. I think I mentioned to you that in my book I also had siblings who had grown up with siblings with developmental disabilities and then those who became the primary caregivers. But since there's such a wide age difference between my sister and me, I'm wondering with them being that close in age and I guess with the differences in the developmental phases stood out even a lot more. But how did the children respond to her that were the older ones? And then at what point did your son realize that she was different?
The older sisters, they were, it's hard. I know my second daughter had a really struggled with it. And I remember we were going out to eat one day and she was like, why are we going out to eat? And I said, because let's go home. She didn't really want to eat out in public with my daughter. And then we went to a conference in Columbia, South Carolina, one of the very first conferences I've ever been to. And they were in elementary school. And we were looking in at the children, the siblings and the children with Down syndrome. They were all together. And I noticed my second daughter was not holding the other children's hands. So she was very fearful. And really confused and didn't quite understand. And then she became one of her sister's fierce supporters. She couldn't support even, more. And then my older daughter, she seemed to take it well. And Isla has even spent the summer with her sister in California. Her older sister lives in Los Angeles now. And Isla has spent the summer with her. And oldest daughter has participated in the National Down Syndrome Conference and volunteered, and her big sister did a dance together during talent night. So, and then my youngest son, I'm not quite sure when he knew, but he knew he had to be protective of her, so he was very protective of her. But he never, I don't recall him ever saying, why is she different? My grandsons have asked, why doesn't she drive? And so we've talked about the differences and about disabilities. And because of my sister having MS and my daughter's already an adult, so they are very comfortable around and very protective of their aunt also.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Do you come across the fact that children are surprised to know how old Isla is? Because I come into that, the kids say, well, how old is she? I said, ask her.
Yes.
And when they tell her, they look at me like, that's not true.
Yes, and they always think she's younger, a lot younger than what she is. They do.
So how did your husband deal with her having a developmental disability?
and
Well, the very when she was born, I knew something was different. I didn't know quite what it was. She was very quiet, and she at birth she opened her eyes, and then after that her eyes were always closed. So I was asking the nurse, "Well, what's going on? You know, is she okay?" "Oh, yes, she's fine." The day I took her home from the hospital, the doctor came in and said, "I think she might have Down syndrome." And I said, "Okay." And I guess the doctor was shocked because I don't know, my reaction was very, you know, low-key. And so she asked me, "Do you know what this means?" And I was like, "Yes." So I called my husband, and it's just, he was totally rattled. I came and picked us up to the hospital. And when we got home, he had left one of our suitcases in the parking lot. And so I was upset. And then the doctor told me, "Well, wait a couple of years and we'll see. She looks just like you." And she does look like me. But we had her tested within 2 weeks of her birth. And
About
a month later, we went to the genetic doctors, and it was like a scene out of John Q. My daughter and I, my husband was on one side, and the doctor on the other side. And all they could tell us was all the things that she wouldn't be able to do. And one of the things they said was, "She'll never live alone." And I laugh now because here I am at 65, and I've never lived alone. And she's lived on her own for 4 years. But and so when we left the doctor's office, it's going to start babbling. And she was only a couple months old, and I guess she was telling the doctor, "You're wrong," because she just, you know, she walked in 2 years, she potty trained in 2 years, and she just excelled. And but my husband, when we walked out the doctor's office and we got in the car, my husband just took his fist and just rammed it through the windshield. And he was upset for days, and we had to get over that. That grieving period. And one of the things that's so it's just, you know, when I look back, that when you know better, you do better. We were all set to celebrate the birth of my daughter, and then when she found out she had a disability, it became a grieving. It was like she was still alive, but she, you know, but it was a grieving process. And then while I was waiting for the doctors to tell us that she actually had Down syndrome, the doctor called one night and said, she does have trisomy 21. And I was ready just to break down and cry, and then she started crying. And when I went upstairs to her room, I said, "You know what? She has the same needs as her other two sisters have." And that's how I approached it. And we never looked back after that. And my husband, he would read to her, he would play soft music, he would exercise her. So it was really a family project, or just supporting Isla and giving an early intervention. It's so important to get your child involved in early intervention, and, you know, where they're monitoring her and keeping up with her development. And I'm so happy for the African Americans with children with Down syndrome, because we didn't have that support back then. So it's just so wonderful to see so many beautiful African-American children with Down syndrome doing so well, and to have the support of other families. You know, we talk back and forth online, on Facebook, and it just makes a difference. And we've come a long, long way from hiding our children from the stigma of you have a disability, something had to be wrong with you, or you had to do something wrong in life. And it's not true. You know, things happen. And they're all God's children. And you know, they are angels. They really are. They have such sweethearts.
Exactly. What have you found to be the difference? Because I'm sure there might be some listeners that are saying, you know, why is it so important to have someone, to have a support group of your own culture and ethnicity? What was the difference? Because I know that you network with others, but what makes this so special for you?
What makes it special is because we do have different cultures. We do have different ways of doing things. And it's just, for instance, when I started preschool, and I started going to the to the support group. It's called Mother's Morning. I had to get off the work to go, and the mothers there didn't work. Some of them didn't work. They all, their husbands worked for IBM. I was from a working class. And so some of the parents were wonderful, but other parents, they were like, you know, looking at me strange, or I guess they were trying to figure out African Americans have children with Down syndrome. So it wasn't really a comfortable situation. But I did bond with some of the families, and I'm still friends with them today. But it's just a big difference, just having someone that you can relate to. A lot of the parents live far away, they live in different communities, so you can have that day-to-day interaction with them. And like I said, when Bethlehem was born, they were more uncomfortable with me being there than I was with them. And I was determined that I was going to keep going, because no matter how much money they had or how much our differences were, one thing we had in common, our children had Down syndrome. And nothing in the world, could money or a statue or race or anything else, could erase that. You know, that's what we had in common, and that's what kept me pushing forward. And up until she was in college, when she started community college, she still, I mean, we met family, but nothing ever stick, you know, or the relationships never, you know, lasted. But one day I was picking my daughter up from college, and there was a little young lady sitting on the bus stop waiting for her her mom, and she was African-American. And I was so excited. I parked my car, wrote a note. I said, please tell your mom to call me. And her mom did. And I tell you, her mom and I have, and our families have been together ever since. And she told me the other day it's been like 15 years. I said, I can't believe it's been that long, 15 or 10, I can't remember. But we have gone to Down Syndrome Conference, the National Down Syndrome Conference. And when I first got going, it was just an eye-opener. There was only, you could count how many African-American families on one hand. Now we have a whole group that go. And we're bonding with other families. And she tells me what's going on. I tell her what's going on. So we, you know, give each other information. We support each other. And it's been great. And then my daughter has a best friend. And like I said, because of a sharing of ideas, they both got in college at the same time. And that's, I don't know how that happened, but they both were accepted, and they graduated together this year.
Now, is that,
a big difference, having someone to relate to, having, you know, someone in your same culture to relate to.
And I think, you know, no matter, even though there are some things that are universal, there's some things that are culture specific. In terms of how we relate to one another, and dealing with extended family members, you know, how you know, that can be an issue, and we all have some issues with extended family, but I think how culturally some things are dealt with, and how we respond, and what the options are available to many of our young people. So that is something, and I had a similar experience here, because where I live is different than where she grew up. And, you know, when she first started her program, you know, I've always, you know, always been a person who I associate and socialize with anyone, but I did realize that there were some differences in terms of how people perceive who you are. And there were just a lot of things that at the moment didn't feel comfortable. So it's like, okay, we're seeking out additional, and there are a couple of people who have been very friendly and have, you know, invited her to their personal events and homes, and, you know, we've shared some outings together, but it's a lot different. And so it's like, I want her to be able to have someone that she really looks forward to, but she takes all my friends. You know, I become known as Kim's sister. It's like, I'm no longer Evelyn. It's like, oh, this is Kim's sister. It's like, okay.
And I find myself, introduce myself as Isla's mom, because she knows so much more, so many more people, and they know her. So when she was younger, that was, I'm Isla's mother.
Okay. Wow. I was hoping to be able to speak to your daughter, the oldest one that lives here in California, and I have never had a chance to make the call.
I did befriend her on Facebook, but I was hoping that she could share her perspective because her relationship with Isla in many ways sounds like that of mine with Kimberly. She used to come up when I was in college and stay with me, especially during the summer. And, you know, my friends all knew her and liked her, and even now people will say, how's your sister? And we just always had a special bond, and she just thought she was, you know, Miss It whenever she was somewhere with me. You know, my mother said, well, go on with yourself. So at some point I would really like to meet and talk to your daughter, just, you know, compare some notes about being siblings.
Yeah.
Now, has there been any discussion in your family about what is to happen with Isla's care when you or your husband are no longer here?
That's a very important topic, and that's one that parents kind of shy away from. But it's so important to make preparations. And also, that's one of the reasons why you should not feel like you have to be your child's own caregiver. You don't want them to be so dependent on you. So when you leave them, they're lost. So one of the things, you know, by giving her the independence, by even right now she's on a waiting list for a supported apartment living, building, having a trust for them, and having the right people to do the trust, because you do it the wrong way, they can lose their benefits. They give them the benefits. So, you know, and now that our children are able to go to college, starting when they're born, starting that college fund.
Okay.
And because our children are living longer. So, you know, I guess back in the past, you know, they wouldn't live, you know, they gave them a short lifespan. But now they're outliving their parents. So it's very important to plan ahead, to make sure you have a good trust plan in place. Teach them independent skills. Teach them that they can still survive even if you're not there. And you should do that with all your children. But it's so important with your children with disabilities to know that life and death is natural. And Isla knows that she's lost, you know, some close relatives, so she's aware of that. But I want her to even be even more comfortable. Like, if mom or dad's not here, I still have a life. For instance, she's involved in self-advocacy groups. They have an action club in Charlotte that's sponsored by the Kiwanis Club. That they, it's a volunteer group. They do volunteer work, and they also have fun. She belongs to a self-advocacy group. So she's involved in different things in the community. So you want those natural support out there available for your child. So their circle is a lot larger than just that little circle in that immediate family. And sometimes your families are not the best, you know, because it depends on how you and it depends on you as a parent, how you cultivate that family interaction and your attitude. If you, you know, oh, I have a child with disability, and your family or anybody feels that. And, you know, that kind of helps them treat them a little different. But if you're upbeat and positive, others will see that positivity, and they'll feel the same way.
Wow. That's something. So have your children discussed, like, how they would deal with her care when you're no longer?
We have not had an in-depth discussion about it, but my oldest daughter and my younger daughter, they're willing and ready to step in and to be part of her life as long as, you know, they can be. And like I said, they're very involved in her life now. They, you know, she interacts with them. Like I said, she spends time with her sister in California. She spends time with her sister here. She also has three nephews that love her dearly. And so she has that, you know, they're really close and they have their interaction.
And it's interesting because I always knew that I would have my sister. And when my mother started talking about, I don't know what's going to happen to her, it's like, are you serious? You know, because she used to tell me, she's your baby anyway. She's not mine. But I think, I don't know, as now being the care provider for her and I'm being the oldest, I always am concerned about what will happen when I'm gone. And it's like, okay, well, God answered my prayer to have a little sister. I got a perpetual little sister. I said, so he knows mm-hmm. before she was born that she would have needs to be met. So I just have to trust that he will provide. But I'm really not sure. You know, either my sons mm-hmm. are in a position, barely still, to take care of themselves. And it's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that does concern me in trying to involve other people mm-hmm. in our lives. But it's different when you have a, you know, small to almost non-existent family. So that's why.
That'll be ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be, you know, it's a changing situation, you know, who you think might be today might not be the right person tomorrow, you know, down the
mm-hmm.
road. So it's ever evolving, and that's why it's important to have other natural supports around your child. And when I talk about natural supports, I mean being able to live independently with support.
Mm-hmm.
Having that church family, like Isla, she sings in the choir, and they look after them. We mentioned she went to school for 4 years. You can't sing in the choir now because you're away at school. You can't go to choir practice. So when she came home to visit, the first time she came home, I go to church and she's up in the choir singing. And the choir director said, don't worry about it. We got Isla. So I go, okay. So she's back home now. She's singing in the choir. So she has her church
okay.
and just
now,
getting her, you know, different parts of her life, you know.
Mm-hmm. So she has many components. What was
right.
the transition returning back living home like?
It's been a little difficult, I would say. With this now, her social, as far as the social part of it, is going great. She's back involved in the Action Club, the advocacy group. But now in our state, we have this new system called Cardinal Innovations. And so we're still putting things in place, community guide. I'm supposed to meet with them next week. She has low vision, so her employment support will come from the Division of the Blind in North Carolina. So they'll be helping her find a job. And just getting back in the community and getting those supports, not only respite, but just community support. Someone that will come and take her around the community, take her to her meetings, or just do things with her. Still
wow.
learning cooking skills, self-help skills, that would always be ongoing.
Mm-hmm. How are her communication skills, speech?
She's shy, and in fact, she's more shy than she was when she was younger, but she has excellent communication skills. And what happened the month after she started college, I saw a big difference in communication skills. And one of the things that that wasn't there and what I didn't even know to push is social skills, functional communication skills when she was in school. And that should be part of her individual education plan, her IEP. Our children were in, you know, self-contained classes or separate classes, and they didn't get that interaction. So it was hard. One of the things that was hard for her and still is, you know, having a sustained conversation with people, you know, asking the right questions or interacting. And it just soared when she went to college. And to see her and her friends, Andrea, when I'm driving them home from school, they're in the back seat and they're talking back and forth about different people and different things. She didn't have that when she was home. She didn't, you know, didn't have that interaction. And it's, you know, and I'm sure it's a fact with all many parents of children with Down syndrome and with intellectual disability, they have very few friends. So
mm-hmm.
even in the community, so it's very hard, you know, and it's heartbreaking to see that. And so when
mm-hmm.
she went to college, that was just completely different, you know, to see her laughing and talking and discussing, actually having a conversation about things going around her, about friends. She has a boyfriend. She's had several boyfriends since she was in college. And they talk back and forth about that, and it's just amazing. So it's a big difference. So when she's back here now, in so she still has a lot of downtime that we're trying to fill in, and that's ongoing. Yes.
Wow. Just like it is trying to come back from college for most of us, getting back in the loop.
Yes.
So believe it or not,
kind of like
a whole hour has passed already, even with my being late getting on. So we are past the time. We do have some callers on the line, and I'm going to open up the lines to see if someone is interested. I waited late to open the chat room, but I'll see if anyone wants to have any comments or ask any questions. If this computer doesn't freeze on me, and I've already gotten a message online. Okay, it says it is not responding. Ah! Okay, here we are. Okay, let me see if I can open up the line. Pray for this computer. This is a test for days. Okay.
Hello.
All of our lines are open. So if any of our listeners would like to have any comments or have any questions, please feel free to do so now. We see you there. Okay. No comments? No questions? So we have a few area codes there, but I won't impose unless they're maybe... Would you call it muted out? Well, we thank you for being on and for listening anyway. And this is your opportunity. We do have a one note on Facebook. And where did it go? From Kathy Winfrey Webb. She says, I'm so glad we have the opportunity to share with you and others to make people aware of our beautiful children. I'm listening to your segment with Chandra Lumsden Lazar, and I am so amazed at the information she is sharing. Please continue to feature stories like hers to keep bringing awareness to Down syndrome. So thank you for that note, Kathy. Appreciate it so much, and I look forward to being able to connect with you. I'm really excited because even though this is a different phase of my sister's life, it's an extension of the work that I do anyway, and as I mentioned to you in a prior phone call, I was also a foster parent and had the opportunity to foster a sibling pair of two sisters, and the youngest had Down syndrome. And they reminded me so much of the relationship between my sister and me. And they both are adults now, and she's just amazing. We were able to connect. They were adopted by a family not too far away, and she's just such the little lady. And it was funny when the oldest one had her first child. We all went to the baby shower, and the sister was just, she was just too cute, and it was like, oh, you're not going to be the baby anymore. But I think it's just very special to be able to reach out and to share. And because I'm active in foster care and adoption community, it did not occur to me until just not too long ago, what happens to the children who go into care who have Down syndrome or other disabilities when it's time to transition out of foster care? And it occurred to me, they're the ones to get passed on to just yet other institutions. And it's like, it just made my heart sad. So there's something that I want to do to be able to engage the community in becoming big brothers, big sisters, you know, the village to that population as well. And I think in teaching our young people how to care for them and how to be friends with them, it gives them another level of compassion. I think it cuts down on the sense of fear and bullying that takes place, because everyone who comes into contact with them is still a little awkward, and then later it's like they want to do things with her. You know, one of my goddaughters likes to take her to go get her nails done, and she takes her out to do things. It's like, oh, excuse me, I wanted to go too. But it's nice, and it feels good to be able to see people have a positive response. So we do need to keep putting not only the information out there, but making, exposing our young people to one another and developing those ties. So I just want to thank you so much for being available to do this interview. And I know I put it off for a couple of weeks
and then we had some difficulties, but I think we're cut from the same cloth in that we don't give up.
Right.
That's one of the things that you learn with having a child with differabilities, is what I call it. And I was laughing as I was doing this. I said, well, what is the lesson in this? Well, my sister is extremely slow. She has OCD. So one of the other symptoms of OCD is not only do you repeat certain behaviors, that some of it is like suspended motion. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So I've learned, people say, you are so patient. I have to be here. Otherwise, I would have been digging in the ground.
That's so true.
I started pulling my hair out, but my hair was already coming out. So, but it's amazing to me what that you have and what characteristics that you have when you need to have them. And I wouldn't take, it's like, again, Maya Angelou, her book says, wouldn't take nothing for my journey now. I wouldn't take anything for being the sister of my angel. I just love her to pieces, even though she works my nerves sometimes. But
yes,
I love her to pieces, and it's just so great. So I look forward to meeting you someday. Would you like to give our listeners information on where they can find you, where they can read your articles, how they can contact you?
Yes, I'll be happy to. I am on Facebook, and my email address is sumazer@gmail.com.
Okay. And say that a little bit more slowly so people can catch it. Okay.
S, like a slam, U-M, like Mary, A-Z, like zebra, A-R, @gmail.com.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure that someone will want to reach out to ask some questions, because you shared not only your experience, but you've shared some very valuable information that I know I'm going to probably need to come back up on and to listen to. And you will definitely be hearing from me. So, and I was looking at the National Congress, and I saw that they even have a special group for siblings. So I definitely want to become a part of that. And to, you know, Ms. Kim likes to go places, and she likes to eat. And, you know, she said, go sleep in a hotel. And I said, not tonight. She says, why? So I think she would enjoy the experience as well. So I'm looking forward to
great.
It. Do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to share?
Just thank you so much for having me on the show. And I do hope I've made a difference in and providing that extra support for parents. And like I said, things have changed tremendously over the years, and I'm happy to see that. And I hope our parents, African-American parents with children with Down syndrome, continue to communicate back and forth and to give each other encouragement and strength as they go through their journey.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And just appreciate your child. Just appreciate and love your child.
I missed the last thing you said?
I said just appreciate and love your child. Love them where they're at and enjoy the moment. You know, live each day moment by moment.
Exactly. Indeed. And also learn from them. So there's a lot there that can be learned. It's like,
so much.
Because, I guess she got me taller. I guess she taught me a thing or two. It's just amazing.
Oh, yes.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
So thank you so much. And to our listening
audience, thank
you for listening. For if you listen specifically for the topic, thank you. We welcome you to come back and listen to our program first and third Wednesdays, 6 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Central, and 9 p.m. Eastern. And you can also go online and find this on my Facebook page, and my Facebook page is actually Miss Evelyn, the Heart Lady Speaks. And I also have a page entitled Entertaining Angels Aware, and that's where I post information relating to our young people, as well as some pictures and videos of my baby girl. And also there you can also take a look at my book, Entertaining Angels Aware, I Am My Sister's Keeper. And if you wish to order, we're actually placing in a new order for a reprint that should be coming in probably in about 6 to 8 weeks. You can purchase online at www.hearttalkpublications.com. heartpublications.com. That's heartpublications.com. So thank you again for listening. And as I always say, follow your heart and do something special.
Good night.
Good night.
She cried, she cried, she raised her.